you in the 06010.
Welcome in. Fantasy Focus Football is presented by Geico. Switch to Geico and see all the ways you can save. What we're going to do, guys, is as we're a week out from the NFL draft, is first we're going to find a way for the NFL to move the draft up 2 weeks earlier, Stefani, because I am sick of rumors that I have no idea whether they're just rumors or whether there's actually anything substantive to them.
If you don't know, then nobody knows, because Field, I'm looking to you for all the accurate information.
I stopped doing mock drafts. As a kid, I loved doing mock drafts. Yeah. I mean, obviously the accuracy was about 1%, right? But it was so fun because I just thought to myself, it's me being an armchair GM. Now I can't stand doing them because the problem is every time I think I have any feel other than the first overall pick in the draft, I'm like, well, I really have no idea what Houston's going to do at number two. And if you have no idea what Houston's going to do at number two, it really complicates things for three and beyond, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. I haven't done a mock draft in years.
Other than fantasy mock drafts.
Of course, fantasy mock drafts. But NFL mock drafts, a lot of respect for our team that does them because, I've tried. And the last one I did, I felt great about. Yeah. I was like, I got this. Like, you hear the rumblings. You hear the information that's out there. You have a feel. And then it's like, second pick's made, and it's over. Yep. It's like your bracket
being busted.
Yeah. Exactly.
When the wrench gets thrown in like it did yesterday at the number two pick, like then everything cascades downward from there.
I mean, do feel like we're at peak misinformation season with the draft. Like the last 2 years, even the last 2 years, like last year, I think it was still this point last year, we were still talking about like Malik Willis, Matt Corral, Sam Howell.
Yeah.
It was like
first round picks, right?
They were like third, fourth, and fifth round.
Out. Yeah.
No, I don't mind that misinformation. I mind when it starts getting like personal or, you know, I hear some of the medical misinformation that goes around, you know? So I agree with you, Field. Move it up sooner and we get rid of that.
The plausible deniability is where it gets me. You know, when you call a guy is, you know, whatever, like he doesn't put his all into his craft or, you know, it doesn't work, doesn't care about the game as much as others.
Like, no, listen, like if he's
USA guy's slow and you can prove it because he runs a 5.240, I'm fine with that, right? But the other crap, get it out of my life here. Just thinking about mock drafts. So I always think about this because it happened, I think, last year or the year before. Our buddy Josh Norris, so if you don't follow him and don't read his stuff and watch his stuff at Underdog, you're missing out. He is awesome. Him and Hayden Winks have great content together.
For sure.
During the pre-draft process. And Josh, I think last year, had 16 of 32 picks in the first round. Talk about sniping it during a mock draft. Like, if I get four, I feel amazing.
Exactly.
He got 16, half amazing. The first round. So another reason why you should be following and consuming all of Josh's content. So I think one of the most prominent realities of fantasy football is recency bias. It happens all the time. Things that happen last year where you say to yourself, that's going to happen again this year. Is the reason why Jonathan Taylor went number one overall last year and everybody did not think twice about it because he had never missed a game and he was awesome the year before that. And it's the reason why everybody is now all of a sudden afraid of Jonathan Taylor because he got hurt. And believe it or not, you do get hurt when you play football, especially when you are a running back. So we're going to try to learn some things from last year and how they're going to apply to this upcoming season. And maybe we'll have some disagreement about how we think these rules should be applied this year. But I'll start because I do believe that taking a quarterback early has more merit than ever before after what happened this past year.
What is early? Can you define
that? And early is not a first, not anywhere in the first two rounds.
Okay.
Not touching it. The absolute earliest that I would take a quarterback is the back end of the third round. When I say early, I mean like being the person that starts the quarterback run as opposed to the person that says, I am totally content waiting for everybody else to make their picks, especially in a league of 10 or larger. And here's the reason why, is obviously we all saw what happened last year. And I tend to think that last year was like bottom 10 percentile of outcomes, right? All the players that busted last year, Stafford and Brady and Rodgers and Wilson and all the guys that were not good last year, like I don't think we're going to have that many players that stink up the joint, but I do think as you look at the board this year for quarterbacks, it does start to wane in terms of certainty somewhere after like sixth or seventh best quarterback for me and everybody else beyond that. I could see some guys that have great seasons. Here's an example, like Dak Prescott having a top 10 fantasy season is not unfathomable at all. On the other hand, he could be like he was this year, which was on a couple of occasions, okay, but largely just a sufficient starting quarterback. So I might be more motivated to grab a Mahomes or a Hurts or an Allen or a Burrow or a Herbert, who I do think bounces back in a big way, or a Lamar Jackson, who I think, assuming he's there on the field in week one, bounces back himself, than I have been in prior years, just because I realized how much of an anchor it could be if you're stuck with a Stafford or a Cousins or a Dak or any other quarterbacks from last year that really ended up being a player you started because you had to, not because you wanted to.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think to some extent, those the big three, a quarterback, maybe you could put Joe Burrow in there after he ran the ball a little bit more last season. But I do feel like if you're in the third round and you're looking at an Allen, a Mahomes, or a Hurts, those they really separated themselves from the field last year. Obviously, Burrow at four was fine. But those three guys, I feel, can elevate to the point that they give you a sizable edge, even if you do hit on a Trevor Lawrence or someone like that. But yeah. The only hesitation I would have here is you don't want to draft a position or a player at their peak, which, you know, there's already chatter about Josh Allen's a year older and they want fewer design runs and that kind of thing. Jalen Hurts obviously might throw more, but maybe he runs the ball a little bit less. He's missed some games as well. There's reasons to be a little wary of that and look for, you know, and again, there's opportunity costs too to spending a second or third round pick. And it might cost you a second rounder in 12 team leagues this year to get one of those three guys of not getting another star at another position. And look, last season, if you did that and you took a star running back receiver, whatever it may be, and waited, you know, you could have put together Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. You know, you could have put that duo together. That was a popular kind of wait till the double digit rounds and go that route strategy. And there were other guys. Daniel Jones was top 10. Tua was terrific when he was healthy and on the field. Geno Smith was QB5 last year, which was unbelievable. Like, who would have thought that was coming? But nonetheless, and by the way, some other guys that were picked early, Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, did not work out, right? For injuries or a variety of reasons. Herbert was just, the production wasn't there. Dak Prescott, same kind of thing. So I think you could look at it both ways. The best thing I could advise, though, is build your board and just follow the value. If one of those guys slips and you want to jump on a quarterback, go for it. But don't force that over. Just don't go in and say, I'm taking one of the big three. I don't care. I don't think that's a viable strategy.
I will say this. Given that, speaking generally, and there are always going to be exceptions to everything we talk about in fantasy football. Speaking generally, the fact that wide receivers at the top of the board tend to be a bit safer than running backs at the top of the board these days. If I go wide receiver in the first two rounds, I might actually be more likely to take a quarterback, one of those quarterbacks early. The reason why I say that is that if my quarterback, either I'm paying the premium that's too significant, or he doesn't totally flush that upcoming year. Like, if I have a running back that whiffs and a quarterback that whiffs in my first three picks, that could be deteriorating for the rest of your roster. And I just think generally, like, the floor for Cooper Kupp and Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase and Stephon Diggs and Davante Adams and Tyreek Hill just feels higher to me than once you get, like, you know, Jonathan Taylor is great, and I still feel really good about Jonathan Taylor as a top six running back this year. But we saw last season, even when he was healthy, what it could look like when things weren't going perfectly because the passing game utilization was down, the offensive line played poorly last year, and the touchdowns just weren't there. Daniel and I sort of see things comparably in some ways as far as quarterbacks. Daniel wants to emphasize, though, draft a mobile quarterback, which is so darn essential. It just really is, because there are a couple quarterbacks who can be surgeons from the pocket and still make up for it, like a Joe Burrow, even with a bit more rushing this past season, and a couple others. Maybe Aaron Rodgers can bounce back and prove it. Brady was like that forever. But you draft a guy that can run, and it just changes everything. Go look at Justin Fields' passing stats last year. Trivia. Two seasons. How many 300-yard passing games does Justin Fields have to his name?
Zero.
Zero. Zero 300-yard passing games to his name, and you could make a compelling case for him on the back end of that three or four quarterback tier at the top of the one, right? You said Burrow and, I'm sorry, you said Allen and Mahomes and Hurts kind of separated themselves on a per game basis for a while last year. Justin Fields was right in that mix as well.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm with you. And then you have guys like Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff, Derek Carr, pocket quarterbacks, Matthew Stafford, even Brady last year. You know, as you have more of these running quarterbacks coming in, those guys have no ceiling. Yeah. Like, they just, even when Derek Carr was playing his best football, or Kirk Cousins is playing his best football. Do you realize that since Kirk Cousins got to Minnesota, the Vikings are sixth in touchdowns in the NFL.
What's that, quarterback 13?
And I think they're fifth over the last 3 years, right? They have been scoring touchdowns at will. Kirk Cousins can barely crack the top 10 in fantasy points. He's lucky if he's ninth or eighth, because he does not add any value with his legs anymore. Are you still a little on Washington? That has stopped. These guys just don't have upside, and that's why you take a shot on guys who add value with their legs, including Daniel Jones,
who cracks the top 10 for quarterback rankings this year, just because the rushing upside is so significant. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I think that will hold up enough. And I think the passing will get better for Daniel Jones because he'll actually have wide receivers this year. They haven't really addressed that position specifically. They did trade for Darren Waller, of course, who already gives him a big boost. But I got to figure the Giants walk away with at least one wide receiver in one of the first three rounds of the upcoming draft. But Stefan, you can listen to me or you can listen to Eric Carabel. And just like on principle, like, would you listen to me or Eric Carabel? But sort of anything in life. You can be honest. I'm not listening.
Eric's listening, by the way. We have him on conference.
It's so funny because Eric's been dug in on this for as long as I've known him. So we're going on a couple decades.
I don't even think
here.
He's like, drafted a quarterback in a mock for the last 3 years.
I know. Like, he takes it. He wants. He wants whatever your leftovers. That's what Eric Carabel wants to take. And he has a compelling case for it. I mean, he was saying that last year was the outlier, not the rule. I think for me, I definitely am looking at some of those top quarterbacks early. It's interesting, Field. You say third round, and I'm thinking of most leagues. Unless it's a league of us, I don't see those guys even making it to the third round because I think that everybody is feeling this vibe of I need one of these top quarterbacks because they're such a difference maker in terms of points that you're. I could see, depending on the league, a couple people at the end of the first round going for Mahomes.
Oh, like, I think round two.
End of round two, but if you're on the. You say end of round two, but I think if there are people who think I may not get a chance to get him. So the person who drafts last in round one and gets the first, right, they could take him right there because they're going to say, I'm not going to get that person if I It is. Yeah. I'm not saying it's the right move. Uh-huh. I'm saying that I could see somebody, if that's who they really want to have and they know their league mates, they may decide to go that early. I think there's a couple things here. One is something that I'm going to look at that I don't think was accounted for enough as we talk about all these quarterbacks. Was sort of the fit in the scheme. I mean, Russell Wilson was a quarterback that we thought would provide value with his legs. He still had something left in the tank. We thought he, with his wide receiver compliments in Denver, he'd be airing it out. We thought we would get that kind of data from him. And then he was in an offense that did not fit for him, you know? And how much of the drop-off was him and how much of it was that he and Nathaniel Hackett didn't really jive in terms of what they were running for him? It makes me want to look at some of the situations. We have more offensive coordinator movement than I can recall. Don't you think, Field? I mean,
I think over half the league in the past 2 years has changed offensive coordinators.
I think it's more than that, yeah. It's rampant. Yeah.
So as I look at what are these quarterbacks going to be doing? And is it a system where they're going to be free to be mobile if that's what they do? Or are they going to be constrained by the offense that they're running?
You know what's interesting about that is...
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza. The number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
That could be a tricky thing to suss out. Because I don't think there are any indicators going into last year that Russell Wilson wouldn't fit with Denver.
Oh,
it was worst case scenario outcome.
Yeah,
it was as bad as it could possibly be. Yeah, when we were talking in the offseason, like, if we were like, what's worst case scenario and best case scenario, this was probably actually worse than what we would have talked about for worst case scenario.
Yeah.
But with all the things that influence you, right? So the same way we're looking at, well, these mobile quarterbacks were stars, we're going on recency bias. And if you have a bad taste in your mouth from what happened last year, where you thought somebody was going to be more productive than they were, is that going to change what you think about a quarterback in playing an entirely new system?
Really, really interesting conversation. Derek Carr, not that he has a ton of upside generally, right? But like, that's an example of a quarterback changing systems for the first time. Well, changing teams for the first time ever, not changing systems as he did so last year with Josh McDaniels as his head coach.
I will say this. Last year, passing and scoring were down. And if you look closer at that, the reasons behind that, it kind of makes sense. Quarterback injuries were up. There was a lot of quarterback, you know, average games played for projected starters was way down. Running back health was good last year. And we're actually down on running back, I feel like, right now. And that's after a good year for running back health. So that's something just to think about as really, you're navigating
a couple things from just, I'll throw this injury angle in, you know, because it's what I do. But and when you look at the quarterback injuries, something that's happened in the last few years that we never used to see is injuries to their throwing hand and throwing arm in case of Brock Purdy. But if you look at like the thumb fractures, the thumb ligament tears, the, you know, so Dak Prescott, Drew Brees had this a couple years ago, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott, you know, getting hit in the helmet when you, these guys, you know, the guy, pass rushers are getting to them, the physicality that the quarterback is facing when they're getting contacted. If they, so if you have a team where you, we talk about the offensive line and protection all the time, but it, we also talk about we want a quarterback who's going to stand in the pocket and not be afraid. We want them to be mobile, but maybe they're, you know, we don't want them to run at the first inkling of some kind of pressure. Well, if they stand in there and take contact, maybe that ups their injury risk because of what we're seeing in terms of elevated hand, upper extremity injuries for quarterbacks. That's one thing. And then there's also the stuff we can never account for. When quarterback goes down, tears their ACL, you get a Joe Burrow random thing that happens, but you can count on one of these top quarterbacks going out every year, no matter how much you like to project, you know, that you think they're going to be safe. That's that risk does go up with the running quarterbacks, but you know, I don't, it's not going to stop. It's not going to change their game. The other thing is, I don't know if you guys saw this news the other day, but there is now a quarterback's specific position helmet that has been approved because it's gone through testing and showed decreased number of how do I say this properly? It has a definitive effect on impact. So many quarterbacks go down, they hit the back of their head. We saw this with Tua. So this helmet is specifically designed to have more reinforcement at the back of the helmet to minimize the concussion effects.
Good stuff there.
So hopefully we're going to see fewer of those kind of injuries with the quarterback, but you never can be sure.
Fingers crossed on that. Let's go to Liz's rule, Mike. And I think this one is borderline, like this is indisputable. Take a wide receiver, consider a wide receiver, I should say, in the first round. And on Tuesday's show, we talked a little bit about Christian McCaffrey and how it's tough to make the case for him as 1.01. And other than Austin Eckler, there's no running back that's in that conversation for 1.01.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you look at the top options at running back. And again, there's always question marks, but more so than in a long time, I think, across the board. I mean, Austin Eckler, you know, 28 years old now, he asked for a trade, might stay put now. Could he still be traded? Could he be traded during the season? Yeah. I mean, there's at least things aren't great, super great there. But Saquon Barkley, you know, started off great last year. He was like putting up RB2 numbers most of the season last year after that really good start. Jonathan Taylor, we know what happened last season. Josh Jacobs coming off that massive workload. I'm worried about a fall off of 100-plus touches. That's been the history of guys that have 400 touches or so. And, of course, Derrick Henry's 29 years old. So you think about your top six or so options at running back. And there are questions there, whereas any questions with Justin Jefferson? Maybe we'd like more touchdowns, I guess. I mean, just talk about a high-floor player that's in his prime and an offense that scores a lot of touchdowns. It's going to demand the football a ton. Really not a lot of competition for targets. T.J. Hockenson is number two there with Adam Thielen gone for sure. So, and Dalvin Cook might not be on that team in 2 weeks from now. So there's really a lot to like about Justin Jefferson. I absolutely have no issue with him with that first pick.
Yeah, I'd say that also beyond that is just like everything's roster construction specific, right? Mm-hmm. But just like it feels like the boom games were so much more frequent for these wide receivers last year than they were for the running backs. It just felt like the chance for 25 points was far more in play for wide receivers and every running back or any running back not named Austin Eckler, it was going to be a stretch to get there. Even Christian McCaffrey, as we talked about on Tuesday's show, with Elijah Mitchell. So we are all in favor of a wide receiver in the first round, with a couple of exceptions, of course. And I think if you look at my top 10 rankings this year, it'll be more heavily weighted towards wide receivers than it will be towards running backs.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, last year, the right strategy, and again, you don't want to get too caught up that. You want to look forward, not backward. But you can learn a little from the past. The right strategy was rounds like 4, 5, 6, 7 for running back. I mean, if that's where you attack that position and got Pollard and Ramondre and guys like that, That was a home run season. You know, that was the strategy last year.
Well, you got to increase your odds.
That was the in mass. That was the right strategy.
The assignment for this particular show was to think of a rule that you are going to apply to fantasy football and drafting next year. Mike decided to make it life advice. What is your life advice that also applies to fantasy
Mine
football?
Mine was listen to Stefania Bell in all things, but specifically injuries and guys coming off injury or a year off from an injury. So, you know, I think the thing we've argued about most over the last couple of years is I'm like, this guy projects so well. And if he's healthy, he's going to be great. And you're like, well, he might not be healthy, or he's healthy now. So now's the year to jump in. And last year, the two obvious examples were I was in on J.K. Dobbins. You warned me against it. You were correct. And you said, but, you know, the year before I was in on Saquon Barkley. You warned me against it. And then last year you said, now he's good, you know. I'm obviously paraphrasing, but you were in on Barkley last year. I was not, and lesson learned, he was obviously very good. So, you know, obviously I'm going to keep that better in mind going forward. But Stefania, there's some interesting names this year that I'm worried about projecting, like Kyler Murray with the week 14 ACL. Javonte Williams and Breece Hall were weeks 4 and 7. Zach Ertz week 10. And then a couple Giants receivers week 11, Wandale Robinson and Sterling Shepard in week 3. Those are the fantasy relevant ACL tears last season, and I'm sitting there doing projections like, do I project a return in week 4? And if Breece Hall comes back in week 3 or week 4, how good will he be? So I'm gonna listen to you on these players this year as I formulate these projections.
Yeah, and the challenge really is that this you can hear all the chatter you want right now about guys being quote unquote ahead of schedule, which makes me nuts because number one, there's guidelines are guidelines, but you can't accelerate biology of healing. So, you know, there is a certain amount of time it takes for tissue to repair itself. You cannot say all of a sudden we're just going to make this guy move faster. It just doesn't work that way.
So I've got two running backs that I have temporarily at RB18 and RB19 in my rankings. But in my rankings, I have a document, a Word document. They're highlighted. And it's Breece Hall and it's Javonte Williams.
Yep.
Because if those guys play 17 games this season and have a reasonable workload, I expect them to surpass RB18 and RB19.
Yeah.
I have major hesitations about either of them playing 17 games this season. And even if they do, and it sounds like right now Breece Hall is probably more likely to do so if he has any chance, I can't imagine him being a 20-touch-per-game guy because it would feel negligent to do so to a running back coming off of an ACL tear. But it makes them two of the trickier players to rank at this juncture. RB 18 and 19, that could easily move down to RB 32 and RB 33.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to what I was saying earlier, you really can't evaluate this till you see what they're doing when they're actually touching a football. We don't see that till training camp, and sometimes we don't even see it in camp. Last year with J.K. Dobbins, I was thinking, well, we're going to wait. Unfortunately, there's this artificial timeline for players where they feel this need to get on the field by week one. In fantasy purposes, tell me, would you not prefer a player, if you knew they weren't coming back for a month, but you knew when they came back after a month, they were in really good shape and you were getting the rest of the season where they were in pretty peak condition, just adapting to playing games, versus making it back for week one and having sort of the J.K. Dobbins effect where you're in, out, you would always take the guy where you felt like a better health. But who knows whether it's contract incentives, it's public perception, it's them being, you know, the organization sometimes will say, we expect him back week one, and then they got to backpedal off of that. All those things can factor in. You really don't know until they're doing football activity in full. But I will say this, Breece Hall and Javonte Williams did not have, their injuries are very, very different. I mean, Breece Hall had a pretty straightforward ACL, Javonte Williams, not at all. And so when I look at the risk factor for Williams coming back this year, I'm far more concerned about him than Breece Hall. And I, with the qualifier that as Breece Hall returns, he's not overloaded. It will be very interesting if they get Aaron Rodgers there and they have what they have in the passing game. They actually could have a great setup for Breece Hall so that he could gradually increase his workload and be performing peak when you need him most in fantasy.
Yeah, I think that Samaje Perine free agent signing is going to continue to be talked about a bunch this offseason because the tone has already changed within the Broncos organization about Javonte Williams' timeline. At first, it was, looks great, on track. And then more recently from GM George Payton, it was something to the effect of like, not sure if he'll be ready to start the season, which to me is typically GM code for probably not going to be ready, but we're not quite prepared to play our hands yet. Like, but this screams PUP list to me, at least.
Yeah, I'm worried about that. And I we might learn a little more on draft weekend too if they spend like a day two pick on another running back to go with P. Ryan. So I'm keeping an eye on that.
Do they have a day two pick?
I don't know. That's a good question.
They are one of the most. They are one of the light. They have some of the lowest draft capital in the entire league. So they may not be able to do so. But you're right. I mean, they could take a fourth round running back, and it would still be instructive, in my opinion, right? Because there is some depth in this class, even if it lacks star power beyond Bijan Robinson. Last rule suggested by Matt Bowen was to stream tight ends, and Bowen does not want to repeat the 2022 mistakes with Pitts and Waller. I'm okay with the idea. Obviously, if I don't have a Travis Kelce or Mark Andrews, et cetera, Mike, the trick is probably just like, there's like, if we are accepting the fact that there are very few good tight ends, it might make it hard to pick the correct one week in and week out as a streamer.
Yeah, there's not always going to be a Travis Kelce, right? I mean, it's just the way the nature of the beast. He exploded last season, was way ahead of the field. If you drafted him, obviously it was a huge value. That's not always going to be the case. But on the other hand, I mean, last year my favorite avenue was take TJ Hockenson and then a little later take Pat Freiermuth. And if you did that, you had two outstanding tight ends. That was a great strategy. So I'm with him. I mean, if you can find some value,
well, that's interesting. Tight end ones, let me just press you one step further on that. Are you saying that like you wanted those two players because you wanted to basically like increase your exposure and hope that one of the two hits? Because for a long time, the rule, a rule in drafting is like just draft one tight end. You could only realistically play one per week. So are you saying you were kind of increasing your lottery odds that way?
Not necessarily. If Freiermuth fell far enough, I would take him as well. Or if I missed on Hockenson, then I would target Freiermuth. So I should have said I was looking generally for one of those two. I was keeping an eye on Andrews in the first few rounds, but then I was like, all right, Hockenson's in that next tier. You know, we've talked about tiers all the time. You're looking for that guys in certain tiers. So I like the Hockenson value. If I missed on him, then I would take a shot on Freiermuth. And that was fine. And that kind of aligns with what Matt Bowen's talking about. But, you know, I do think this year you look at the top 10 tight ends and, you know, Kelce stands above the rest, no doubt about it. But, I mean, you get down to 8, 7, 8, 9, you're looking at Ingram and Njoku. Like, that's if I come out of my draft and get a nice deal on one of them too, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, like, I guess I was like thinking about the pre-waiver process basically, right? Because if there are five tight ends that play well in week one and you happen to win your week one matchup, you may be out of the running for those players just because other players in your league grab them before you do. So it's almost like a pre-waivers run. Rather than having that fifth extra wide receiver on your bench, you have a second tight end available.
I was just going to ask, that was the question I was just going to ask, is where are you guys at with having a second tight end on the bench? Because for so long it's been, nope, you don't need an extra one, just pick one up, weak, stream the tight ends, kind of what Bowen is saying. But I don't know that there's always a streamer that's going to be solid enough for you to be comfortable with taking them.
Yeah, I mean, I think your bench is just, you, especially early in the season, you want, you know, dart throws with upside. I mean, I'm not going to hold Austin Hooper going. Like, I'm not going to, all right, it's a 16-round draft. I'm not going to take Austin Hooper or Hayden Hurst, but like Chaco Conquo, maybe? Yeah, like maybe. Or Jelani Woods, maybe.
I'm still planning on Irv Smith panning out this time with the Bengals. I'm watching Irv Smith this year. I like Irv Smith. Yeah. I think him with the Bengals, you know, they no more Hayden Hurst with the Bengals. Mm-hmm. And we've seen how they like to throw the tight end. Mm-hmm. I still think he's going to pan out. He might be my bench, like get him late because no one's going to pay
attention. Another guy that he missed all of 2021, wasn't himself last year. Maybe this is the year. So I'm with you. I was just writing about him today.
You know, sometimes it's hard to talk about roster construction in fantasy because it's so dependent upon league size and how your first couple of picks go. Like there are incalculable number of scenarios, but I think during the preseason we'll dive a bit more into some of these just sort of theories about when it makes sense to grab a second tight end, when it makes sense to take a quarterback early, as we were discussing previously in this show, when it makes sense to avoid running backs early, or if you do avoid running backs early, how do you account for it later? Just various different things that can be winning strategies. It's just hard to fit them all into like one neat and tidy package because there are so many things that go into a draft.
Yeah, we could do probably a series of shows just on like late round dart throws, like upside guys we like.
We have 60 wide receivers we're ranking, and that's more than any other position because, I mean, I could find almost one or two per team that is not ranked outside the top 30 that you're like, well, if everything broke correctly for KJ Osborne this year, he could be a top 35 wide receiver, right? And that's just one example of a player who's not in my top 35, but could have a path to a top 35 season.
I think that's totally valuable. One of the hardest things to do is to round out your bench. You know, it's getting those late rounds. You're struggling for how do I value one receiver over another? Because you're really looking for the one with the most upside. Who has the chance to break out? And that becomes a little clearer we think, as you get deeper and deeper into the preseason.
Kyle can mark this down. I have an idea. As we get to the preseason, especially when we're back to our everyday cadence, is like, maybe we'll just do a show of lottery tickets, but maybe what we should do is pencil in 5 minutes at the end of every show, and we'll just have, we'll grab one of those, we'll grab a roll of tickets, lottery tickets, write a name. You just start writing names. If you have a lottery ticket you want to talk about, you put them on the back of a ticket. Then every day, Kyle will just go to the bucket and just start to grab them out one by one. And if it lands on KJ Osborne, we'll talk about KJ Osborne for a second.
It's on the fly. I like it.
On Ben Skowronek, like, you know, that. Which maybe he's not much of a lottery
for this.
Right? But like, yeah.
Something with a lottery. I don't know. Yeah. What do you call it when you...
We had the silent auction.
Yeah. Something. We'll find something.
I just think it's a way to weave... Again, not all these guys are going to hit. It's the lottery. Just like you don't often win the lottery, but if... five or eight of them actually crush, and we, you know, that you're just looking for paths to fantasy success.
That's the thing. Do you ever do that when you're done your rankings and it's like maybe like early September and you look over your ranks and you're like, look past the top 40 or 50 and you're like, there's going to be some guys in here that are going to be big breakouts this year. Who are they? Like, it's hard to figure out, right?
You got to draft
some of those guys and some will hit.
It's harder. Like, I agonize more over the guys that don't make the cut to the top 60 than the players that I have inside my top 20 for wide receivers. Like, I'm not saying they're all perfect. I feel pretty good, though, about my top 20 wide receivers being guys that, you know, barring injury or barring something unforeseen, are going to be useful players, and that most people understand where the fantasy value is coming from. It's like you lose a little bit of sleep at night, though, when you're like, crap, like, I got Treylon Burks at wide receiver 46. Does he deserve to be, like, 12 spots higher? Like, showed some talent last year. They got nobody else there. Big body, physical. Or are the Titans going to be an objectively terrible offense this year? And he finishes with like 52 catches for 600 yards and three touchdowns. Like, that's possible too.
Yeah, it's easy to forget there's 32 teams, each starting two receivers. That's 64 already. And then you're not, you know, a lot. Most teams have three receivers on the field most of the time. That's 96 players. Yeah. And you're only ranking 60. That's a lot of players too. And you always feel like you're disrespecting a lot of guys, especially a wide receiver, more so than any other position.
All right, so good stuff there. Go ahead and find these rules. They're available on ESPN.com and all of our content because content is rolling in fast right now. It'll only ramp up after the draft, which is finally just 1 week away. We are coming back again next Tuesday for our usual show cadence for Stefania and Mike. I am Field. We'll talk to you guys on Tuesday. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you then.
He's a NASCAR guy with a basement shrine, a Langford fan for life. Chargers are off to a terrible start, but that won't change his mind. Matching up all the cornerbacks, touchdown regression and weekly stats. But if your team falls flat,